Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. In fast motion. Yeah. And that makes us the super fast episode of Stuff You Should Know on Spice.
Super fast?
It's going to be not short.
Oh, okay.
We're just going to be talking really fast like this pretty much the whole time, all right?
So we can get out of here.
Yeah, pick up, will you?
All right. Spice, like us.
Yeah.
Did you like that movie?
I did. I was raised to dislike Chevy Chase.
Really? By whom?
My dad.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't think my mom liked him either, but my dad definitely thought he was a jerk.
He was kind of a jerk.
And, apparently, I read this Saturday Night Live biography about, like, the show.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty interesting. And they talk about how he was the first one to be able to develop a cocaine habit. Because he was the first one to start getting paid.
Oh, wow.
And apparently he didn't share.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So that made him a jerk?
I guess. I don't think that's why my dad thought he was a jerk.
Yeah. But
anyway, all apologies to Mr. Chase if you listen to this.
I have always been a big fan.
Have you?
Yeah, and I was very saddened when his career kind of faltered, and I miss Chevy Chase.
Well, okay.
He's on TV now, though. He's
on the TV Community, right?
Yeah, is that it?
He was on it. I don't know if he still is, but he was.
I don't
was.
Watch that show.
Yeah, I don't either. But, no, I hated Fletch. I'm just going to come out and say I hate that movie, Fletch. I hate Fletch 2. I hate Fletch 8. I hate all the Fletches. I think it's a stupid movie, and I hate Fletch. But I did like Funny Farm a lot.
That's weird that you hated Fletch.
I hated Fletch.
Interesting.
I still hate Fletch. You could show me Fletch right now. I'd be like, this is stupid. Turn it off.
Oh, it's so funny.
So, Chuck.
Yes.
You know a little bit about spies. I believe you had a bit of a story to share with everyone.
A little bit. I mean, I was obviously spy stories of real life spies are kind of fun. And to me, the best all time story, spy, real true life spy story, was the story of Christopher Boyce and Dalton Lee.
Okay.
The Falcon and the Snowman.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen that movie. Have you?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Is it good?
Yeah, really good.
Timothy Hutton and Sean Penn, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
And that is the story of these two guys who, two youngsters living in Southern California. And Boyce was hired by his father, I think, as a guard at an aerospace firm called TRW Incorporated. And they, that gave him access to a lot of CIA documents that were working with the aerospace firm. They were drug dudes, so he was like, hey, we can make a lot of money selling these secrets to the Soviets down in Mexico City at their embassy, make money for drugs to run a drug operation. And they did so for like a year successfully.
A year, huh?
From 76 to 77 and were caught, of course, and jailed for espionage. And I had a little trouble for some reason finding out the current status of Lee. I did find out that Boyce actually escaped from prison in 1980 from Lompoc, was picked up again in 81, I think, and then was released in 2003 and lives, I think, in the San Francisco area.
Wow.
I've got this awesome LA Times article that I'm going to read tonight for fun because I didn't have a chance to read it before this.
Oh, is it like a long read?
Yeah, it's one of those like 15-page articles.
Nice.
His big interview he did after he got released. But I can't find out what happened to Lee aside from a rumor that he was eventually released and Sean Penn hired him as his personal assistant. And I don't know if that's true.
Weird.
I can't verify that.
I understand Sean Penn's like the real deal when it comes to like combating poverty in Haiti. Like,
yeah.
He's like in there in the trenches every day.
He is.
Isn't that crazy?
Some people think he's a jerk. I happen to like the guy.
Oh, I like the guy a lot too. Yeah. So Chuck, how did the Falcon and the Snowman become spies?
They were working Boyce was working at an aerospace firm as a night guard and had access to sensitive documents.
So why did he start?
To make money.
Okay, so that's actually one of the main ways that a spy is recruited.
Yeah.
There's several. Nice intro, by the way, dude.
Thank you. That makes two.
Yeah.
Times they are changing.
Give me your punch card.
Okay.
There are a few ways for a person to become a spy. Probably the most straightforward way is to maybe join the Army intelligence, join the CIA right out of college.
Yeah.
And basically just join your country's intelligence agency, be trained, and then sent into the field.
Sure.
Maybe posing as a diplomat or being a diplomat.
Yeah.
Apparently the line is very fuzzy between a person who's actually a diplomat and a diplomat who's a spy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like one and the same. I mean, they're still performing the same functions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They have a job as a diplomat.
Yeah.
But they're also just spying, too.
Sure.
And what are they, I guess, what's the basis of spying?
Well, what they're after, obviously, and this is the no-brainer stuff, but we always have to point it out. They're after any valuable information to give to the country that they're working for.
Right.
Any kind of, it's obviously usually military secrets, although we will talk a little bit later about corporate spying, which is huge.
Yeah.
These days.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, typically people with access to these either offices or high-ranking officials, they do have recruiters that go out, and like you said, they'll dangle a little money in front of your face if they think that a person is someone they can turn.
Right.
Like, hey, you're not happy with your own country. We know this. You want to sell them out? Or we know you really like money and you're kind of unscrupulous. Do you want to sell them out?
Right. Or we know your mother needs surgery and
sure.
your government insurance, although the gold standard of healthcare is American healthcare. It's part of the American system. Therefore, it's not going to really cover the surgery. So here's some money.
Or, hey,
get mom the surgery.
You want a movie made after you, about you?
Right. After you're executed?
You want to be famous? Mm-hmm. You want to feel important? Because you're nobody. You want to be somebody? Why don't you dig up some secrets for us?
Right, and that's actually like a really good recruiting tool or recruiting method is to identify somebody who has a menial job, some sort of file clerk.
Yeah.
But has access to really sensitive information.
Exactly.
Go in and, like you said, pump them up. I mean, I don't think you would actually say you're a nobody. You would maybe promise the making them a somebody.
You have to break them down before you build them back up, you know.
It depends. It depends on what you're trying to do.
Okay.
So those are the... Oh, did you touch on ideological disillusionment with your home country?
Yeah, a little bit. Just, you know, like communism obviously was a big thing.
Yeah.
We covered McCarthyism.
Yeah, like the Rosenbergs.
Sure.
They were at the very least communist sympathizers who supposedly, allegedly... spied for the communists.
By the Soviets. Way, did you see that email we got about that?
No.
We got an email from a guy in the Air Force that said there was a great interview with, I can't remember who it was, that basically said the Rosenbergs did have a lot more to do with it than, like, at first it was like, oh, they're guilty. Then later on, as we pointed out, they were like, you know, they didn't exactly sell the deepest, darkest of secrets, and maybe they were made an example of.
Right.
But then apparently a more recent interview does implicate them a little bit more, to the extent that their family even was like, ooh.
It's so weird for McCarthy to be vindicated.
Yeah.
So you've got blackmail, too, as a way of getting people to do what you want. Like, we have these photos
sure.
of you that you don't want published.
Right.
Like, you clearly have a lampshade on your head.
Right.
And now you have to be a spy for us. And then once you have the person agreeing to spy, oh, there's also walk-ins too.
And I think that might have been Boyce's deal was an opportunist who was like, hey, I want to be a spy.
Yeah.
Who do I call about that?
Exactly. And usually, if you're going to be a spy, you identify a country who's probably got the most money or the most desire for the information you have.
Sure.
And then you go to their local embassy.
I guess that'd be a good way to do it.
Yeah, you just walk right in. But if you are that country's diplomat slash spies working at the embassy, you're going to be immediately suspicious of someone like that.
Very true.
Apparently, the U.S. had a Russian defector. I can't remember. It may have been...
Dmitry?
It may have been the guy who's mentioned. No, Oleg Penkovsky. Penkovsky.
Yet.
He was a Russian general, I believe. Soviet general, or he was with the KGB.
Uh-huh.
And I think he was a walk-in.
Wow.
He made a secret trip to the U.S. And over years and years and years, like, he finally gained the trust of the Americans. He's like, look, this is legitimate information.
Is this Cold War stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that was, like, the height of spydom.
Not quite so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. I read a recent article that
I can't wait.
Yeah, there's, like, a lot more going on now than you might believe.
All right, so you have a paid, blackmailed, or ideologically disenchanted spy.
Sure.
Who you trust, and you assign them a person named a controller.
Yeah. Harvey Keitel, probably.
Yeah.
In most cases.
Yeah.
Yeah, controller is the person who, I think they're just like your only contact, basically, right? Who you're going to be given the information to.
Yeah, or getting information or instructions from. There's going to be one person you meet.
Yeah, you don't want a large, you don't want your spy to know a lot of people.
Right.
Because that's not, they'll be compromised.
There's not a Christmas party.
No.
You know?
They should, though.
No, they shouldn't.
They'd all just sit around and, like, look at each other very wearily.
Right. Or they don't make eye contact.
Right.
The reason why they do this is called compartmentalization, because if the spy is caught, there's only so much information they can give. They're
That'd
like, well,
like,
I was meeting a Mr. Orange. That may or may not be his real name.
Right.
I never really saw his face. And actually, I never met him. It was all handoff stuff. The park bench.
Well, you're talking about, we might as well go ahead and cover that, the drop.
The dead drop.
The dead drop?
Yeah.
You see it in movies. Apparently, it's real. You'll drop something in a public place very nonchalantly and then send the signal that it's, you know, been dropped to your controller.
Mm-hmm.
Then they will go to the little hidden loose brick in the public park wall and fish out the microfilm.
Yeah, the microfilm. The
micro dot?
Maybe. What has always struck me about spy work are articles on spies and especially the gadgets and technology they use.
Yeah.
I always just assume it's like 20 years out of date.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I was reading this book called Veil by Robert Woodward.
Uh-huh.
Excellent book about like Reagan's secret wars. Really good book. And they're talking about this light beam, I guess a laser.
Yeah.
That you can point at a window. And it measures the vibrations from a conversation and translates them into audio. So it's an eavesdropping device that they were using in the early 60s.
You're talking about the Laser Emax 3500.
I am.
Well, they have these now. I'm sure it wasn't. There are different ones. But, yeah, it's an invisible infrared beam, hits the window and records the vibrations, filters out all the gobbledygook, and then amplifies it and records it. It's amazing.
And it's been around since the 60s. What do you think they're doing now?
Well, this is the one that's available now, so it's probably just...
That's a slicker, better version?
Well, and the article I read, too, on modern spy equipment basically said just that, is it's a lot of the same stuff. It's just faster and smaller.
Gotcha.
And, you know, digital.
What's that one called?
This is called the Laser Emax 3500. And the cool thing is, when you go to their website, it said, as used by David Letterman and Jay Leno and Fox 5 Undercover.
Weird.
Yeah. Oh. I guess they've done little bits where they spy on people.
Well, I don't know. Jay Leno spied on a NBC board meeting when they were trying to figure out whether to go with Letterman or him to replace Carson. Yeah, you got to see that movie.
No, I've seen it. I don't remember that, though.
Yeah, well, he was just sitting in another room, like, taking notes, like in a closet.
Yeah. Writing on a post-it.
Exactly. Okay, well, let's get back to it, man. You have a controller. Your spy is compartmentalized.
Very much.
Before you start doing dead drops and everything, you don't want to get ahead of yourself because your spy is going to get greased. You have to first create a cover and support it with the legend.
Yeah.
Right? So a cover is just like your secret identity or your false identity.
Sure.
And then the legend is the backstory around it.
Yeah, and it needs to be detailed and thorough.
Right. So, for example, you are a, if you're into fishing, I think the article uses.
Yeah, it's a good example. Or your character is, your cover is.
Right. You're going to have fishing gear. And if you have a, that's part of the legend. You're going to have fishing, the legend is that you are into fishing, you're a fly fisherman, big time.
Mm-hmm.
So then at your house, your apartment, whatever that's set up for you, you're going to have fishing equipment.
Yeah.
And if you're good, it's going to be used fishing equipment, and it's going to be of a certain quality, depending on whether your cover is frugal.
Sure.
Or, you know, kind of spendy, or likes, you know, the best of the best.
That's a good point about use. I didn't even think about that.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be like a movie thing, is the guy sees the fly fishing gear and it's got a tag on it or something.
Right,
and
exactly.
All of a sudden, doom.
Right.
Or boom.
Or both.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you are, say, a Russian accountant, posing as a Russian accountant,
yeah,
you probably should know the ins and outs of Russian tax law.
Sure.
You should also probably speak Russian with a Russian accent from the from the region that you're supposedly from, that your cover's from.
Yeah, you saw No Way Out, right?
Is that the one with
Kevin, what's his face, Costner?
Yeah, no, I didn't.
Oh, that's a good one.
I've heard. That was like a couple of years ahead of my, I think I was watching Disorderlies while my family went and saw No Way Out.
I'm not going to ruin that one, actually. I'm a spoiler guy usually for movies that are like 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to leave that one to the people to go see it.
All right, I'll check it out.
Or to rent it or whatever, because it's got a nice little twist.
Okay.
All right.
What else, Chuckers?
Oh,
this is not a quick thing.
No. If you establish a cover, it takes years to establish a cover. You're not going to waltz into the Russian embassy and say, hey, I'm just a Russian accountant. And where are your documents? This is not a small camera in my tie. It takes a long time, and people go, it's like being an undercover cop. You have to establish his trust over a period of months and years even.
Yeah. And you're going to, in the meantime, be performing accounting.
Yeah.
As part of your business.
And you better be good at it.
Yeah.
Or toast.
Yeah, or you could go to jail for tax fraud. Wouldn't that be surprising?
Yeah, that'd be pretty
good. That would definitely help your cover, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, you had to go to prison for the state?
Yeah.
Sure. You are not going to be memorizing things, although in a pinch, I'm sure they're probably trained to memorize a certain amount of information.
Mm-hmm.
But what you really want to do, and it is like in the movies, is to make tiny little copies, photocopies or photographs of sensitive documents.
Yeah.
And relay those to your controller.
And then that ends up on the microfilm, the micro dot, or... It could even just, you could make copies if you are like that file clerk who has regular routine access to that information. Just make copies of it and take it out of there.
Yeah, and they have the little handheld copiers. Have
you
seen those? Those are cool.
Yeah, those are pretty cool.
What you don't want to do is take anything.
No, because then somebody might notice that.
Exactly. The documents are missing.
Right, but you don't have to listen to us. Your controller is going to tell you how he or she wants the information.
Sure, and there are plenty of female spies, so we definitely don't mean to say he a lot, but we're dudes.
I said he or she.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, Valerie Plame, she was a spy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very true. It's not just on the ground either. It's not just human spies. We've been using satellites for years.
Since 1960, I believe.
And the fact of the show for me is that before the digital age, the satellite would take photographs and, I guess, develop them and drop them in a bucket in the ocean.
I think it was undeveloped.
Oh, was it just the negative?
It's like the film canister.
Yeah, of course it would develop.
Yeah.
It's like a photo mat up there.
Yeah, there's like some stoner up there who lives inside developing pictures.
Oh, you remember the photo mat?
Yeah.
What a bygone era that is.
Yeah.
And those stoners, where are they working now?
They're
not at video stores either.
Coffee places.
Coffee shops?
Yeah. I think so. That's where I always see them.
They are the 99%.
Yeah.
So they don't obviously have to drop them in the ocean any longer. They can just relay them digitally, and they've actually been doing that since 1970.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So long before we were taking digital photos, the government.
And sending them wirelessly.
Yeah, over radio, I think they did it.
Well, that's what wireless is.
Yeah.
Radio.
It's pretty amazing.
It is.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, friends, did you know that it's estimated that 85% of all customer service interactions are automated?
Yeah, it's true, and customers are the lifeblood of all business. So you probably don't want to put that responsibility in the hands of a robot. And that's why thousands of business owners call Ruby and hire them.
That's right. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special.
Yep, you definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would.
That's right. Finding someone who cares about your business as much as you do feels impossible at times, but the team at Ruby are experts in providing the best customer experience and turn every ring into a relationship.
Yep, this year can be your best year yet. Small, efficient changes can make a huge impact on your bottom line.
That's right, and Ruby answers all of your calls live from right here in the U.S. They'll take messages, answer questions, route calls, and much more. Visit ruby.com, or better yet, give them a call at 844-900-RUBY.
So again, that kind of proves my point, though, Chuck. I mean, like, what are we on to now? I know it's faster, smaller, better. There's got to be some cool stuff that, like, wasn't around before, though.
Well, spy planes back in the day were large, like the U-2 spy plane, and it would have to fly right over the enemy. These days, of course, we have drones flying them. Well, not flying themselves, but unmanned drones.
Right.
Doing the dirty work.
All sorts of very dirty, dirty work.
That's right.
All of this, Chuck, is called technological intelligence, or tech-int. I'll bet everybody at your work thinks you're a jackass if you call it tech-int in the CIA.
Yeah, they're like, it's TI, dude.
Right, exactly. Or if you want to just really be in on the slang, just T.
Just T.
So you've got spy planes, technically, at one point were T. Satellites, which now apparently can read a headline on a newspaper.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you see Google Earth.
Yeah.
I mean, my car and my driveway was on it, and that was a little creepy.
I know. It had bird poop on the roof.
It did.
There's, like, wiretaps, that whole laser listening listening device.
Yeah, that Letterman is into.
Do you want to talk about some more?
They have seismic equipment to detect nuclear testing.
Uh-huh.
They have underwater sensors to find things like submarines.
Yeah, which is a big deal. Again, in Vail, which, by the way, I recommend. They were talking about how back in the day to eavesdrop on Russian cables, like the Soviets didn't encrypt all of their stuff on certain cables that were transmitted underwater.
Oh, yeah.
Especially ones that were close to the motherland, right?
Right.
So the U.S. would send subs to go and clamp on to these cables and listen for a few days.
Wow.
And they were like right off the coast of the USSR.
Holy cow.
Really dangerous work. And then they finally made a recorder that they could go clamp on, drop off, and then leave for like a month or 6 months or whatever, and then come back and get it. So there's only like two windows where it was really scary, rather than several days just having to sit there quietly on the bottom of the ocean.
Wow.
Yeah.
This isn't new stuff. That Evolution of Spy Tools article I read was like, have you ever read the Art of War?
What was it? Sun Tzu.
And there are more than 100 references to spies and espionage intelligence gathering in the Art of War.
I didn't know that.
So it's very old. And in the Revolutionary War, they would use invisible ink called Jay's Sympathetic Stain was apparently the best one to use. And they still use, or up until recently, they still used invisible ink to transmit messages. It's crazy. You heat up certain things and it'll appear, or hold it under a certain light. And
like lemon
appear.
Juice.
Yeah. That's the old little crafty trick, you know, how to be a spy.
It turns like kind of this ugly burnt sienna color.
Does it?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
But also, if you look at it, you can be like, oh, it's written in lemon juice. I can see without even, just by moving the paper a little bit. I don't think it's real bona fide spy stuff.
Apparently, the Spartans would spy, and they had a device called the Sky Tail. And it was a long, slender rod, which was wrapped with a thin strip of papyrus. And the message was written on the wrapping, and it was passed on to a messenger. And apparently, it could only be read if it was rewound around a rod of the same diameter. So it was sort of like an
Enigma machine?
Yeah. There you go. Let's talk about that.
Okay. Have you read Enigma?
No.
There's a book about this whole thing, about
really?
The people who are cracking the code. But the Nazis had this very, very clever system of coding, encoding, or encrypting messages, where they would have what's called an Enigma machine, which is kind of like a random typewriter that would assign a code to a message, and it could only be decoded by the same machine, like a twin machine.
Right.
That would get this message and then turn it back into whatever it was originally supposed to say.
Wow.
And the British apparently got in on breaking this at a place called Benchley or Blenchley, I think, Park, where they had a few of these captured Enigma machines and had secretly cracked the code.
I think the Polish, even before that, discovered it and then
and then
shared it with the Brits, who
yes.
were, you know, probably a little further along. Well, maybe not.
Well, I think Alan Turing, who invented the computer, essentially, was one
really?
Of these Enigma code breakers. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
The information, it was codenamed Ultra, and it was obviously, something they kept on the very down low, because you don't want Hitler to know you've got an Enigma machine, because then Hitler kills the guy who invented the Enigma machine.
Yeah, I think they got one from a sunken sub.
Oh, really?
That the Germans were like, well, it's on the bottom of the ocean. We'll just leave it there. It'll be okay. And somebody in the Allies went and got it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool book, Enigma.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
What about the number stations? Did you see that?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So remember we talked about the Yosemite Sam transmission?
It's yes.
Like a data burst and then, you know, the whole I'm going to blow you to smithereens varmint thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I imagine that has to be from some sort of number station, but what is it?
Well, it's a radio station that the government operates, and it broadcasts on short band frequencies just intermittently.
Right.
So they'll have a clue, like a song or an announcement, that will mark the beginning or the end of the secret broadcast. And obviously, they won't say like, you know, and now we will play the secret broadcast.
Right.
Some sort of hidden message. And then it'll be just a series of numbers that is obviously a coded message.
Right. What's awesome is it's not secret. Like any schmo who's tuned into the right frequency
right.
can hear this broadcast, but he won't be able to make heads or tails of it. And apparently, like, this stuff happens all over the world.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So
codes are huge, though.
Right.
Secret codes.
The U.S. isn't like, well, yeah, we're doing this, but it's kind of like, use your brain. Yes, that's exactly what we're
doing. Well, the article I read on The Modern Spy says basically the Americans and the Russians, while getting along, just have this sort of implied understanding that we're both still spying. Like, let's not kid each other.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's spying on everybody as those WikiLeaks cables revealed.
True.
I mean, it's just, you just want to gather intelligence or information on whatever is the case, you know, from trade policy.
Yeah.
To, you know, defense. Any information that you can get gives you an upper hand, and I think everybody does it.
Well, since we're there, these days you're going to find a lot of spying going on. I think the Washington Post said last year that there are more than 1,200 government organizations and close to 2,000 private companies that work on programs related to counterterrorism, That's a huge way that they're spying these days, obviously, is terrorist cells.
Mm-hmm.
Homeland Security and intelligence in about 10,000 locations all across the U.S. So these days, we're spying mainly on terrorist cells, Iran, North Korea, and China, obviously.
Right.
And it says that the U.S. is the recipient of hundreds of thousands of cyber attacks every day from Beijing. Basically, they're trying to penetrate our firewalls.
Yeah.
And seeing what they can get.
And does it work?
Well, I hope not. we are also spying on Israel. Sometimes you spy on your buddies, because in 2008, there was an Israeli report that said that we have a long history of spying on Israel in regards to their secret nuclear program. So even if you're friends with the country, it doesn't mean you're not keeping tabs.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things about the WikiLeaks cables, is they were, a lot of them were about our very close allies and friends. And it was just very embarrassing. And now Bradley Manning's going to spend the rest of his life in prison because the State Department was embarrassed.
And then corporate spying is huge these days. Private sector spy firms, basically, they said that there is nary a large merger acquisition deal that goes down these days without a lot of spying going on, a lot of corporate spying. And the CIA even lets people spies moonlight for corporations to make a little extra scratch.
Is that right?
That's what they said.
Huh.
And they said there's even an entire network of people who do nothing but track corporate jets and their flight patterns.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? But makes sense.
Oh, it does make sense because, you know, you go to where the money is, right?
Yeah, or, you know, I think, was it Coke that had the girl that worked there, the lady sell out?
Oh, yeah.
Or almost sell out to Pepsi, the secret formula?
Yep.
A few years ago?
She was a walk-in.
That's right.
Who approached Pepsi with the secret formula for Coke, and Pepsi told Coke about it. And that lady got in big trouble.
Oh, Pepsi came out?
Yeah, they,
said, we got our own formula.
Yeah.
We don't mind being second tier.
Yeah, they like it. There's less pressure.
So what are you going to do with all this stuff? When you got all this information, who's going to be looking at it? It's obviously not the spy.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you know, you're not just, you don't have one controller with one spy, and that's what all of your information is. You have all of this information coming in from all these different sources, whether it's, you know, satellite photos or, you know, human intel. And you have people called data analysts who are putting it all together, and they write daily briefs or papers or profiles on, say, like the newest leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
And they, it's basically just like, here's this threat. Here's what you want to know about this person. There may be an attack from this group. And it's basically this picture that's cobbled together like a mosaic created of data and information.
Yeah, Stalin apparently received information that the Germans were going to turn on the Soviets in World War II, and he said, "Niet, I don't believe."
Mm-hmm.
So he ignored the data, and look at what happened.
Like a million people died in St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
Or Stalingrad.
So he did not analyze the data to his advantage.
No. Apparently, also, you can use these data analysts to say, we've got a gap here that we need to fill in. So go do this. So
right.
There's kind of like it's a two-way street as far as data collection and data analysis goes, right?
Right.
A pretty good example was the Purple Code of Japan in World War II, where, we had a pretty good idea that Midway Island was going to be attacked, but we didn't know if we were reading the code for Midway Island correctly, which is AF. We thought it was, but we weren't sure.
Right.
So the Army intelligence or somebody said, hey, get Midway to issue a plea for fresh water, saying that they're low on fresh water. And they did. And then we intercepted a Japanese transmission saying that AF was low on fresh water. So we knew that AF was Midway, and we knew then that Midway was definitely going to be attacked. And we won the Battle of Midway as a result.
USA.
USA.
Misinformation is just as important as the real information. Spies spend, you know, from the sounds of this article, just as much time doling out misinformation as they do collecting the real stuff.
Right.
It's a very important part of it.
Yeah. And one good way to do that is to get caught spying.
Double agent?
Yeah.
What's a double agent?
Well, a double agent is somebody who, say, is spying, an American who's spying for the Russians, and then the Americans say, wait a minute, this guy's spying for the Russians. Let's make sure that all of this information that he has access to is altered and wrong and flawed, and then he'll pass it along to the Russians, and he'll be what's called an unwitting double agent.
Right.
Or we can go to him directly and be like, we're going to fry you, pal, unless you start giving fake information to the Russians. And then that person is a witting double agent in that case.
And he'll say, you're no pal of mine.
No.
Or, Josh, you can be a triple agent or even, I guess, a quadruple or quintuple agent. It happens.
Yeah.
To where the Russians, the Americans nab you, and then they turn you into a double agent, but the Russians know about that, and you're still secretly working for the Russians. And the, was this the Grabster that wrote this?
Mm-hmm.
He points out that it's gotten so convoluted with the quadruple and up that sometimes in the end, history can't even tell what they were.
Yeah, like who the person was actually, whose side they were on.
Yeah.
I would imagine that person's probably on their own side after a while.
Yeah. Just trying to not get thrown in the hooscow?
Exactly.
Or the gulag?
Yeah.
I guess we can talk about Operation Fortitude, because that's kind of cool.
Yeah. This was a really big misinformation campaign about the invasion of Normandy on D-Day.
A very, like, elaborate one.
Well, yeah. It included creating fake troops,
yeah.
Fake tanks and troop transports, fake fuel depots.
Like built out of wood.
Yeah, and amassing them on the southern coast of England to make the Nazis think that the invasion of France was going to come from... No, I'm sorry, the northern coast of England.
Right.
To make them think it was going to come from the north.
Exactly.
Right? And instead of the south where Normandy was. And part of this was, a big part of it was feeding double agents false information. And there was one guy named Garbo who was a big player in this whole thing.
Codename Garbo. I like that.
Right.
This is like Blazing Saddles.
How so?
Well, they built a fake Rock Ridge at the end. With fake townspeople and a fake, and when they came a riding into town, a whopping and a whomping, it was they found out it was not real, and then Cleavon Little was able to prevail.
Nice. Well, in this case, the Allies prevailed.
Yeah, sort of like Cleavon Little.
Yeah, they even went further than painting a bunch of fuel depots to look like the real thing. They created a completely fake. Battalion, the first U.S. Army group.
Yeah.
It was led by General Patton, even though it was totally fake.
Yeah.
They had fake radio chatter about this group and the invasion. And on the day of the invasion, they dropped all sorts of aluminum from planes.
Right.
To reflect radar to make it look like there's a big movement of an air force across the English Channel. They did the same thing with submarines. And it looked like there was an invasion coming from the north while there was really one coming from the south.
And it worked, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we took Normandy. That was the first, like, 15 minutes of Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it worked. I mean, I guess it worked.
Well, not the first 15 minutes. I think you're forgetting about the bookends of that movie.
What?
With old Matt Damon in the cemetery.
Right.
And then they went to the awesome part.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right.
It was like the first 5 minutes kind of sucked, and then they
was that Matt Damon?
Yeah, it was him grown up.
I just thought it was uncanny. He hit the uncanny valley.
Yeah.
If it was an actor playing him, or was it Matt Damon in makeup?
No, it was an actor who looked a lot like old Matt Damon.
Gotcha. Well, he was in the uncanny valley. I'm not sure he exists.
Yeah, here's my advice to filmmakers, to people like the Steven Spielbergs of the world. Don't bookend your movie like that. It's always a bad idea.
You think so?
Yeah, man, that movie would have kicked so much more butt if it was just started with the D-Day invasion and ended how it ended.
Oh, okay.
Like everything from that to, what was the Clint Eastwood, Bridges of Madison County? Terrible bookends on that one. Whenever you show like the modern day bookends, just don't do it. Just stick to the story.
Okay.
We're clever. We don't need Matt Damon, old Matt Damon in a cemetery. Breaking down.
No, that was a little
little
that was a little off-putting,
a little heavy-handed.
Yeah, it was kind of like, suck it up, pal.
But who am I? I'm just a podcaster. Steven Spielberg.
You're definitely not part of the greatest generation, I'll tell you that.
No, I'm not.
Do you want to hear a pretty cool story about the D-Day invasion?
Sure.
The month before the invasion of Normandy, the D-Day invasion, the turning point of the war,
mm-hmm.
one of the MI5 guys was doing the Daily Telegraph puzzle, and he started noticing that a lot of the answers were kind of curious. Like, for example, one of the answers was Utah. Another was Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
These were code names for the beaches at Normandy where landing points were going to be for the invasion. another answer was Mulberry, which is the name of a floating harbor that was going to be towed across the channel to accommodate the supply ships.
Another was Shrapnel.
Another was Neptune, which was the code name for the naval support for the operation. And then they also had the answer Overlord, which was the name for the whole operation
The
D-Day
Overlord.
Invasion. So MI5's like, what's going on? Like, clearly somebody's feeding information. One of the ways of disseminating, like you were saying, getting in touch with your controller or letting them know that you've done a dead drop is through the newspaper.
Yeah, like a classified ad or something.
Right. And so they went, MI5 sent some guys to go rough up the person who wrote this crossword and find out what the deal was. He's a 54-year-old school teacher. And he had no idea. The whole thing was total coincidence.
What?
The MI5 finally, they were convinced, like, this guy has no clue what's going on.
Really?
He is not an agent. They looked into his background, and it was total coincidence.
How many words total?
There was like six, I think.
Interesting.
Big ones.
Wow.
Isn't that weird?
That is really weird.
A month before the invasion.
Huh. I bet he was...
I'll bet that guy was nervous
until
they believed him.
I bet he was pooping his pants.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, friends. Did you know that it's estimated that 85% of all customer service interactions are automated?
Yeah, it's true. And customers are the lifeblood of all business. So you probably don't want to put that responsibility in the hands of a robot. And that's why thousands of business owners call Ruby and hire them.
That's right. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special.
Yep, you definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would.
That's right. Finding someone who cares about your business as much as you do feels impossible at times, but the team at Ruby are experts in providing the best customer experience and turn every ring into a relationship.
Yep. This year can be your best year yet. Small, efficient changes can make a huge impact on your bottom line.
That's right. And Ruby answers all of your calls live from right here in the U.S. They'll take messages, answer questions, route calls, and much more. Visit ruby.com or better yet, give them a call at 844-900-RUBY.
Well, I guess that does it for pooping her pants.
Yep.
On this one. If you want to know more about spies, you can type spies, S-P-I-E-S, into the search bar at howstuffworks.com, and that's going to bring up listener mail.
That's right, Josh. And before we read listener mail, we want to announce that our email address has officially changed from stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com
right
to stuffpodcast@discovery.com.
Oh, yeah.
Discovery has finally said, all right, I guess you guys are really working for us. We'll give you addresses with our name on it. Here, you're official.
Yes.
So that's how you can reach us now, and we're going to point this out quite a few times over the next few weeks.
Well, yeah, plus at the same time we say it at the end of the podcast every time.
Sure.
What else? Oh, we have a newsletter.
Yeah, go ahead. Spill it.
We have a Stuff You Should Know newsletter that you can subscribe to. There's a little link to it on the left rail of our Facebook page at facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. It's free. It's not spam. It's bacon because you have to opt in for it. And you'll probably like it. It sends out a link to the newest episode. It has a bunch of articles that we wrote or like on the site. It's just cool. It's fun.
And South by Southwest.
Yeah.
People of Austin, Texas, we're coming back.
Yep.
And we will be podcasting live on Sunday, March 11th. Not quite sure exactly what time. This will be a badge event. If you have a badge, please come out and see us.
Mm-hmm.
But fear not, we are also trying to get a non-badge event together at a local watering hole for regular old fans to come out.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for information on that. We're working on it. Hey, if you've got a place, hit us up. We're looking.
Yeah, please do.
But hopefully we'll have a non-badge event that will be pretty cool. We got some fun stuff cooking here.
Yeah. You got anything else?
Yeah, just a listener mail.
Oh, yeah, that's
just
right.
A regular old listener mail.
I forgot about that.
This is a correction, and while we're correcting, I want to point out, as I have many, many, many times, that polar bears do not live in Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
I was very ill that day. And shouldn't have probably even been podcasting, but I misspoke. Josh technically was talking about emperor penguins.
No, I'll tell you what I was talking about. You know how you were saying polar bears only live in Antarctica and they only live in the Arctic?
Well, I didn't say that, but yeah, sure.
Well, isn't that the gist of what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. I was saying that penguins don't live in the Arctic. They live in Antarctica. Yes, they are also found in places like Australia.
South Africa.
I'm sure Argentina has a share. Chile. Places not too far away from Antarctica, but what I was saying is they're not found in the Arctic.
And emperor penguins, though, are only found in Antarctica. So
thank you for
originally
that.
That's what you're talking about, so I'm defending you there.
Okay, so let's hear yet another correction.
Yet another correction. And we messed up Edmonton, too. The Canadians aren't very happy with us.
No, I know.
So let me clear this up.
Okay.
Calgary, Alberta is a city in Canada. Edmonton, Alberta, is also a city in Canada. Alberta is a province in Canada.
So it's like Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
New York, New York.
And here's the thing. I love Canada. I hate that we mess Canadian things up because we got a lot of fans there, and they are sensitive people.
I know. The only problem with Canada is it's so close to Detroit.
Oh, boy. We love Detroit, too, by the way. So I think that's good. We don't need listener mail because all those corrections were enough.
Cool.
So thank you to all the Canadian fans who wrote in and all the polar bear and penguin defenders of the Earth. We are sorry. We are human and we goofed.
We did. Hopefully we will do better. Let's make it a Stuff You Should Know resolution to do better in 2012.
Well, that's supposed to be done before, so let's just make it for 2013. And let's just keep screwing up. No? All right, let's do better.
Okay. I want to hear spy stories. Okay.
Me too.
We want to hear them in 140 characters or less on Twitter at SYSK Podcast. That's all one word. And you can also reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. And you can send us an email to stuffpodcast@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
In business, first impressions are everything. And that's why every business owner needs to know about Ruby. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special. You definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would. Never miss another customer call again. This year, make your business the best it can be. Visit ruby.com today. Or just call them at 844-900-RUBY.